It's Monday, the 6th of October. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. In today's show, ANC Secretary General Fikile Mbalula on Nathi Mtetwa's SAPS investigation. We chat to Eskom Chairman Mtetwa Nyati after the group's results last week. We bring you a fresh perspective on AGOA's expiry, a shakeup in Apple's outlook, and Taylor Swift is changing the economy yet again. Let's jump right in. The ANC held a special National Executive Committee meeting this weekend. The party discussed the economy, governance, and service delivery, and it's also expected to finalize guidelines for its candidate list process ahead of next year's local government elections. Secretary General Fikile Mbalula took time to respond to questions around the SAPS investigation into Nathi Mtetwa's death in France.
We welcome SAPS sending a team to France to lose an ambassador, even if it was not Nathi, any ambassador. In those circumstances that have been explained in the public, it shouldn't be something that we take lightly as a country. I could imagine if America lost their ambassador in the country and they are told that that ambassador fell from a building. And therefore, and then that's what happened. Leave Nathi for now. Let's say your own ambassador is in New York. And then you are told that your ambassador just fell from a building and that's it. And then the conclusion that he killed himself. It is correct, the government and the ANC support that, to go to France, work with the French, and ensure that there is no stone that is left on this matter of Nathi.
So after 8 long years, Eskom's finally flipped the switch and posted a profit of 16 billion rand for the 2025 financial year. Just last year, they were staring down a 55 billion rand loss. So this is a huge turnaround. I caught up with the group's chairman, Mtetwa Nyati.
The key takeaways from our results of last week. First of all, I think it is really, really important for South Africans to know that the problems that we are facing as a country, we can be able to fix those problems. What is key is to make sure that we put the right people in the right roles and then hold those people accountable to drive the turnaround plan. So what we saw last week was not a miracle. It's a result of a three-year journey that has been taken to systematically address the key systemic issues that Eskom is facing. You saw one aspect of it last week, which was really the financial results. There's also the operational side of things, which is the availability of the equipment, of the machines. We see the energy availability factor sitting at over 70%. When we joined 3 years ago, it was sitting below 50%. And if you look at things like the level of debt, our debt has come down. Where we're sitting at the end of the last financial year, we're sitting at about 372 billion rand of debt, coming all the way from close to 500 billion. You know, all of this is really, really key focus and disciplined execution of our plan.
Mtetwa, are the electricity problems in South Africa firmly behind us, or can we not say that at this juncture?
It depends what you are looking at. There are aspects of these challenges. One is the availability, the energy security. I would say that energy security is largely behind us, the challenges related to that. We'll always have electricity. If we continue along this trajectory of being disciplined in maintaining our coal fleet in particular, we will be having the surplus that we currently having today. But going forward, the challenges are different. It's really affordability of electricity. We need the prices of electricity to be coming down in order to spur the growth, to drive the growth of this economy. Today, we cannot say it is done. So there is a challenge there. So the next big focus of this board, together with the executive management of Eskom, is to be driving down the cost of electricity.
And everyone listening to this interview is saying precisely that. Electricity costs are out of control. Can this be addressed quickly? As you say, it is a focus.
Unfortunately, none of these things can be done just overnight. As you saw, it was a three-year journey that took us to a place where we hardly have load shedding now. It was 3 years. We've got a similar kind of a plan to take out costs from within Eskom. We've given them a five-year plan. They have to take about 112 billion rand of costs from the base. And that's very important, which means that as we think about the future, the kind of increases that we are going to see in the future will be largely in line with inflation, or at worst single digit, and that is the kind of setup you would need in order to continue to be driving the growth of this economy. But it's going to be hard work, really hard, but it's something that needs to be done.
Now, Eskom is not alone in trying to turn things around. Business for South Africa, B4SA, is rallying business leaders to work with government to boost growth, create jobs, and get the SA Inc. story back on track. They're aiming for 3% GDP growth in the short term. Simon Baloyi, the CEO of Sasol, is heading up the energy work stream for B4SA. He's been pretty vocal about the need for more collaboration and smart investment in energy.
I'm feeling quite positive in terms of what we've seen. I mean, if you look at the momentum that we've garnered over the last 3 years or so, load shedding. Yeah, I know I'm not going to declare that, but yeah, I'll say the tough days, structural load shedding seems to be slowly getting behind us. I'm sure, Eskom, Dan and the team still have some work to do before they can make the declaration together with the minister. But we'll be out of those 12-hour load shedding spells, which was quite tough for everyone. And the reforms have accelerated. I mean, if you look at where we are, the ERA has been promulgated. We've seen lots and lots of renewable energy, both by PPAs and big entities themselves and rooftop solar. We've seen a massive uptake of renewable energy through the reforms. I mean, of course, now I have to deal with what I call the low-hanging fruits are gone. And now we must deal with the tough challenges. And one of the challenging issues is the electricity distribution industry, the EDI, and the SAWEM, which is the South African wholesale electricity market. I think we need to stretch those two out, but this priority is top of mind for all the role players in the infrastructure. So if you ask me, I'll say I'm very positive and optimistic in terms of the momentum that we've garnered. However, we must never lose that momentum. We must build on it.
Michelle's a mom who traded in her Fiat 500 for this beast right here. But why the momentous move, huh?
I needed something bigger to keep up with my growing son and his many sports bags.
When you traded in your car with We Buy Cars, was it an easy conversion?
I see what you did there. The process was just so easy. I was given a tablet, had to sign, and that was it.
Basically, We Buy Cars is no mess, no fuss. Okay, it was nice chatting. We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
Another big headline last week, the expiry of AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunity Act. That's got a lot of folks wondering what's next for South Africa's trade. I caught up with Professor Adrian Saville to get his take on what this means for the country.
We have just come off the back of the lapsing of AGOA, which happens a couple of days back. And that leaves a number of African economies, in South Africa specifically in this conversation, to borrow from Buffett, swimming naked, that we've lost access to a very important market. All of that said, South African exports under AGOA have performed modestly, and that might be flattering the performance. We haven't really embraced the potential under AGOA. About one quarter of South African exports benefit from AGOA access, so that's going to evaporate, and one could be, you know, somewhat dismissive and say, oh, well, you know, that's a quarter, we'll make up the difference. There's a big however. It's specific industries that have participated in AGOA, and you can think, you know, more exactly of the likes of apparel, equipment, and vehicles in particular, which lose this AGOA access. And that is deeply concerning. When it then, when you bring that into a geographical context in South Africa, you can think of the Eastern Cape being particularly hard hit by South Africa's loss of AGOA access. Have we shot ourselves in the foot? Well, you know, in one sense, absolutely, because this hasn't worked in our favor. The reason why South Africa has, you know, had tariffs imposed under the Trump administration that are elevated versus others is because of the political stance that we've taken and the allegiances that we have vocalized and evidenced. In the same breath, so in that way, yes, it's absolutely foot shooting. In the same breath, you know, if you go back to my earlier point about the new shapers of industrial landscape and the new drivers of the world economy, that might be where South Africa could well equip itself by hitching our wagon to those forces. All of that said, it's entirely academic. If we actually can't compete in those markets, it's one thing, you know, sort of forming allegiances and alliances. It's another being able to offer viable products, having competitive access and entry. And that then brings us back into a conversation about what South African policymakers, South African regulators, and South African business needs to do in order to take advantage not only of old relationships, but also to forge new relationships.
Switching gears to global markets, Apple's stock just got a rare downgrade. Jefferies is saying investors are way too optimistic about iPhone sales at current prices, dropping their rating to underperform. Edison Lee, the analyst behind this call, joined Bloomberg's open interest to explain why he thinks Apple's in for a rougher ride.
60 analysts rate this stock. You are one of four to give it an underperform or a sell rating. Why?
I think that generally the smartphone industry is a very mature industry. And I think that unless there are some groundbreaking innovative features, a lot of consumers may not want to upgrade. And I think that the growth of the used smartphone market is also putting pressure on the brand new smartphone market. Because, for example, if you're using an iPhone 13, you don't have to buy an iPhone 17. You can buy a used iPhone 16 or a used iPhone 15 that are in pristine condition, and they probably would work for another 4 years. And the functions are still very similar. And we know that the used smartphone market is growing at double digit, and it's already reaching over 300 million units a year. So I think that's a structural headwind for the smartphone market. I know that AI presents a very big hope for growth, but I think that it's actually quite challenging for any smartphone makers to figure out actually what consumers want on AI and how AI can actually differentiate from each other and so that consumers are willing to buy a new phone quickly. I know that iPhone 17 reception seems to be pretty good. I don't disagree with that right now, but I think that whether it's sustainable going into the next 2 months remains to be seen. And also, the market seems to be very excited about the foldable iPhone that will come next year. And I think that the optimism about a foldable phone, I think, may be a little bit premature, because if the selling price is at $2,000 or even more, then I think the TAM is somewhat limited. If you look at some of the similar high-end foldable smartphones in the market right now, for example, Samsung put out one that is very nice, very thin, thinner than the iPhone 17 Air, selling at $2,000. The expected one is no more than $3 million right now.
And finally, in the world of pop culture and economics, Taylor Swift is back with a new album, The Life of a Showgirl. Misty Hedgenis, author of Swiftonomics, says Taylor's not just topping charts, she's redefining how women impact the economy. She joined Bloomberg The Close to talk about how Swifties are changing the game.
She has really curated a hardcore, dedicated set of fans. And, you know, they're used to her reflecting and then producing kind of immediately. And so I think for the fans, this was a great treat.
And talk to us, too, about the element of the fact that, you know, there is this release party. You can go and see it in theaters. That's one way that she touches them. Another way, of course, to bring in a revenue stream. You combine that, you know, with the merch opportunities. Obviously, she's coming off of one of the most successful tours of all time. It seems like there's all these different touch points to her audience.
Yeah, there is. And it's really fun to watch. She is really creative with her art, and she's also a very creative marketer. So, you know, she continues to push the envelope on what singers and what musicians can do and how they can engage with their audiences. I love that this time around, there's not only a listening experience, but also a visual experience in the theaters. And, you know, she connects really deeply to her fans. And I think, you know, part of her goal is to give them opportunities to be together.
That's it for today's BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more on the business front, both locally and globally. Thanks as always for joining us.